Well, we're going to do an exercise together to explore our theme for tonight. So you're going to need pen and paper, and the biggest paper you can find, the bigger the better. And so I'll give you a moment just in case you haven't quite got that ready. And then we're going to kind of work through something that I think will be really helpful for us, interesting, enjoyable, and then we'll move into what I think God is calling us to realize and journey together towards tonight. So I hope by now you've got your paper. And I know some people like to plan out how you're going to be writing on your paper. And so I'm going to bring up on the screen here a few different options for you. So what I'm going to lead us through is five different categories, and each category has four items in it. And so you might want to just do a list of 20, numbered 1 to 20, just go straight down like that. Or you might want to turn your page sideways, draw yourself in the middle there, and then kind of have five boxes representing those categories and the four items in each. Or you might want to just throw them randomly all over the page. You don't even have to number them. You can just write words or come up with your own method. But hopefully that gives you a bit of a plan that you can be working towards here. Also, I want to let you know that I'm going to be working through this at a pretty decent pace. And so I'm just going to leave about 20 seconds for you to think and write something down for each one. And that's not enough time. You could spend minutes on each of these things and think up of many things. So you might want to come back to this and add in things after the service and keep working on it. Or maybe you don't have a pen and paper right now. Maybe you're listening to this message and it's not Sunday anymore. It's later in the week. Maybe you're driving and you can't write anything down. And so if that's you, then just really think hard. Visualize maybe about each of the things that I'm going to mention. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to kind of talk us through five different categories which represent different aspects of who we are, different aspects of our lives. And so the first category is our names. So first category is names, and here are the four items in this category. So the first thing, write down your actual names. So for me, Andrew, David, Cameron. I like to start with an easy one. So write your name down there. And secondly, write down the meanings of your names, if you know them. So for example, Andrew means strong, David means manly, and Cameron means crooked nose. So actually, I feel like all three of them are pretty accurate for me. So if you know what yours are, write down what your names mean. That's the second one. Thirdly, write down any nicknames that you've had in your life. Now, some you may have tried to forget, but bring them back up. Whether good or bad, throw in under the third item there any nicknames you've had. So I'm going to talk about this a bit later, but my kind of main nickname in high school was Doogie, as in Hauser MD. From the early 90s TV show. All right, fourth one. Write down any names that you've been called. And again, this could be good or bad. So what are some names that you've been called that you've kind of carried with you in your life? So it might be stupid. Maybe someone repeatedly called you stupid and you've kind of carried that name. Or maybe someone called you princess and you've carried that name with you. So our first category here, the four items. One, our actual names. Two, the meanings of those names. Three, our nicknames. And four, any names that we've been called. So I'll give you a few more seconds just to finish writing down something for that category. Our second category is family of origin. And so that's the family you were born into. And so, firstly, item number five, I want you to write down, where are you in your birth order? Are you the youngest child, the eldest child? Are you a middle child. Secondly, I want you to write down what your parents' relationship was. So were they married? Were they separated or divorced? Were they both present in the house as you were growing up or not? Were you raised by a single parent? So what was your parents' situation? Point number seven is, what are some defining moments that you can remember that were happy times, joyful times from your family growing up? Might be a holiday, might be a celebration of some kind, event, or just some kind of cool thing that you remember from your family. And then number eight is, what's a defining moment, a significant moment that you can remember from your family that wasn't joyful, wasn't a positive one, it was a negative experience? You think about that. What kind of makes you cringe when you think about something from your childhood? So, category two, family of origin. We had number five, your birth order. Two, your parents' situation. Three, defining moments that were good. Sorry, that was seven. And then eight, defining moments that weren't so good. I'll give you a few seconds to finish that category. Our third category is personality. So for item number nine, I want you to write down some ways that you would define yourself. So it might be funny, smart, good-looking, dumb, ugly, sporty. Like, what are some words that you might use to describe yourself? Item number 10 is, what are some of your interests and hobbies? So it might be, you know, for me, I play soccer. I'm a Liverpool fan. I'm a Dragons fan. So what are some of your interests and hobbies? Again, just kind of write down one or two. You can come back and fill the rest in later. Item 11 is about personality tests. What personality tests have you done and what were their results? So for Myers-Briggs, that's a big one. Can you remember what your Myers-Briggs type is? Or maybe what your Star Wars equivalent of the Myers-Briggs is? I always wondered with that, have you seen it, this kind of matrix of Star Wars characters with Myers-Briggs? And it's like, what's the worst one to get? Is it Palpatine or Darth Vader or Jar Jar Binks? Like, what do you really not want to get? Mine was R2-D2. I didn't know really what to do with that. And 12, what is a role, or what are some roles that you take in your friendship groups? So when you and your friends get together, what's your role in that group? Are you the serious one? Are you the funny one? Are you the smart one? Are you the responsible one? Are you the crazy one? Like, what is your role when you get together with your friends? So that was our third category, personality. We've got 9, describe yourself, 10, interests and hobbies, 11, personality tests, and 12, your friendship group roles. Give you a few seconds just to throw some things down for that. Category 4 is about life circumstances. So for item 13, what's your relationship status? Single, married, widowed, divorced? Do you have kids? Are you a parent or not? So what's your current relationship status? 14, what's your vocational status? Are you a student? Are you employed full-time or part-time? Are you a full-time parent working in the home? Are you unemployed? Are you retired? What's your vocational status? 15, what's your socioeconomic status? So do you live in a house or apartment? Do you have a mortgage? Are you renting? Is your income high or low? Do you feel comfortable financially or not? What's kind of your socioeconomic status? there for 15 and then 16. What are some significant achievements or purposes that you have in your life? So it could be awards that you've got that were significant for you. Could be, are you currently in your dream job or doing something mundane? Do you have goals? Have you experienced success or failures in different ways? So fourth category was life circumstances. And we had 13, your relationship status. 14, your vocational status. 15, your socioeconomic status. And 16, your purpose, so your sense of purpose or achievement. A few more seconds for you there. Then we'll roll into our last category. And our last category is physical and mental health. So, number 17. What are any physical issues or diagnoses that you have? Do you have a bung knee or a sore back or crooked teeth or some chronic condition, maybe cancer? What are some physical issues or diagnoses you've had? 18, what are some mental health issues or diagnoses that you've had? Maybe depression, ADHD, that kind of thing. What are some mental health issues or diagnoses? 19, what medications or treatments are you currently having or taking? So what's your kind of daily routine? What pills do you take? What people do you see as part of your health care? And last one, 20, are you caring for someone else who has a physical or a mental health issue? Could be a child, parent, close friend, other family member. So I'll give you just a couple more seconds there to write something down and then just to take a look at the things that you have written down. Now, obviously, there are many more things that I could have walked us through just then because we're complicated. There are lots of things that go to make up our sense of self, who we are. But these 20 give us a foundation that we can work with tonight. And the reality, too, is that we also give different weights to each of those things. They're not all equal. For some of those categories or items that I just mentioned, that may have no significance to you. You might give no value to that. But for other things, that might have significant value for you. It might be really defining for you. As an example, for me, I was the youngest child in my family of origin. I was also the youngest in my year at school. I was the youngest when I was at uni. I was the youngest employee at PricewaterhouseCoopers when I finished school. And my nickname, as I mentioned, was Doogie, who was a child genius on TV in the early 90s. And so a big part of my identity growing up was by being the youngest. That's how I identified myself. In whatever group I was in, I always kind of just thought of myself as the youngest and also kind of felt like I should be that. And so I always had to kind of figure out what was the next thing that I could be the youngest to do. But then I hit an issue when I was in my mid-20s, because when you're in your mid-20s, you can't really be the youngest at everything anymore. And now I'm 39, like that's well and truly over for me. So I had to go through a process of kind of reassigning value for those things. Another thing I think we can give great value to is things like personality tests. And I mentioned the Myers-Briggs before. My Myers-Briggs type is an ENTP. And I remember the first time that I did that and was saying, oh, what's an ENTP? And it said, you're the visionary, right? And I was like, oh, awesome. Great, I accept. Yes, that's me. And it said, you're bold and creative like Walt Disney. And so I was like, oh, this is amazing. Yes, that's who I am. And then I did it later, about 5 years later, and I was an ENTJ, a different result. But again, I embraced it. ENTJ is the commander. And it says, you're strategic and articulate like Napoleon. And I was like, sure. Yes, that's me too. Yes, I'll be that. I've never done the Enneagram, but I know a bunch of people who are really kind of fanatic about the Enneagram, and you kind of hear them talking, and they'll be describing themselves, and they'll say, "Oh, you know, I did so and so the other day, and then I thought to myself, oh, I'm such a four." Or maybe they'll be talking about someone else, you know, out at a party, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah, you know, he's like really a six, but it's in these situations you can really see his seven wing coming out." Enneagram is like this kind of a whole other world of personality tests and categories, and I refuse to do it. But the ironic thing about that is me refusing to do the Enneagram, probably there's probably a number for that in the Enneagram. So that probably classifies me just by my refusal. I think another thing that we can give weight to when we come to our sense of identity and who we are is our mental and physical health. Often that can be something we give the most weight to. If we have a chronic physical condition, that can become our focus. Or if we've been given a psychological diagnosis, then that can define us. That can kind of become like who we think we are. That's the defining thing about us. And in our society, our language has got better with these things. We don't so much talk about depressed people or autistic people. We talk about people with depression or people on the spectrum. And that's good because we're recognizing that people are people first and the conditions come later. But often our experience of these things is not that neat. They can really feel consuming to us when we're dealing with them. For me, I was going through a period in my life about 10 years ago where I was really trying to figure myself out. Like, why do I do the things I do? Like, what's going on with me? And I kind of came across this idea of being codependent, and I really embraced it. I was like, yes, I'm codependent. Just to be clear, in case you're not familiar with codependency, it's not supposed to be a good thing. Generally, it's like an unhelpful behavioral pattern. But when I found it, I kind of felt like a positive about it. I was like, oh yes, I'm codependent, and I think it was just because I wanted something. I wanted something to kind of help me understand myself with. I wanted some kind of label to give to myself. We're all searching for wholeness. We're all searching for inner peace. We're searching to try to understand ourselves. And I think because of that, we look for something solid to hold on to. We look for the answer to that question, who am I? What makes me me? We all desire permanence. We want a consistent and a secure sense of who I am. We don't want to not know. We don't want to wake up each morning and just be like, oh, I don't know who I am. Or we don't want the things about who we think we are to keep changing. We want it to be consistent and secure. I think one of the ways we get into trouble is when we assign permanence to aspects of our lives or ourselves that shouldn't be permanent or that are actually changeable. And also when we fail to assign permanence to the things that actually should be given it. In the Bible, we find a whole bunch of stories of people who had their names and identities changed because of an encounter with God. We think of Sarai and Abraham who received a promise from God and believed him, and then their names were changed to Sarah and Abraham. Jacob, whose name meant to grasp the heel, he wrestled with God and got a new name, Israel, which means to wrestle. And then Simon, one of Jesus' disciples, had his name changed to Peter to recognize this new calling and role that God was giving him. And Saul as well went from being a persecutor, opposer of God's people, to being one of their leaders. And his name changed in that process as well, from Saul to Paul. So we find examples in the Bible of Jesus, of God transforming people, of people actually experiencing significant change because of their encounters with him. So I want to take you to take this sheet again, and I want you to look at the things that you have written down, those 20 things, and for each one, real quick, don't think about it too long, I want you just to put a P or a C next to it. A P means that you think that thing is permanent about you, and a C meaning that you think that thing is changeable about you. So just real quick, down the line there, just put a P or a sea, permanent or changeable, for each thing that you've got there about yourself. I don't expect you've all finished yet, but I'll give you the second kind of piece of this. And that's for those that you have written are permanent. And this could include things that have already happened, right? So they're not changeable because they've already happened. Or it could be a condition that is chronic, that is an ongoing thing in your life. I want you to write down whether you believe the impact of that thing in your life is permanent or changeable. So the impact of that thing on your identity, is that permanent? If so, put an X next to it. Or is it changeable? If so, put a Y next to it. So the first thing, you're just looking down the list, is it permanent or changeable, P or a C? Second thing, for the ones that you've put a P next to, think, is its impact on you and your sense of identity, is that permanent, X? Or changeable, why? I think this is a really big deal for us, because so often I think we assign permanence to something that could change or to something whose impact on us could change. And to think of some examples, like if you think of your personality or your life circumstances, those are changeable things. And part of maturing is actually our personality changing, our behavior changing. Also, there are some things that aren't changeable in that they've maybe already happened. You might feel unloved by your parents and you can't change that. That's already happened. Or maybe there's a diagnosis or a physical condition that you've got and that, you know, is what it is. But its impact on you can change. So if you felt like your parents didn't love you, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are permanently unloved or permanently unlovable. Or if you have a physical condition or a mental health diagnosis, that doesn't mean that your life is permanently less full. We find an interesting, kind of really vivid example of this in an unexpected place in the Bible. It's in the book of Hosea. Now, Hosea was a prophet who was called by God to announce God's messages to his people. And this happened in an unusual way. God asked Hosea to marry a promiscuous woman. Her name was Gomer. And so he did that. And then Gomer bore a son. And God said to name this firstborn son Jezreel. And that might not mean much to most of us, but Jezreel was a place where Israel had done a bunch of dodgy things. And so it's like if you had shoplifted at JB Hi-Fi one day and you felt guilty about it, you knew you'd done the wrong thing, but maybe, you know, the police didn't come, you kind of got away with it. And then God comes to you and says, I want you to name your firstborn son JB Hi-Fi. So it's not good, right? He's calling out their sin. He's calling out their shame by doing this. And then Gomer fell pregnant again and bore a daughter. And God said to name the daughter Lo Ruhamah, which means not loved. Then Gomer bore a second son. And God said to name him Lo Ami, which means not my people. So think about it. These are the worst names ever given to children at any point in the history of time. Not loved, not my people, and that really embarrassing wrong thing that you did. I imagine these kids didn't even get bullied because bullies felt bad for them. These names were so bad. God wanted Israel to know how far they had gone away from him, that they had messed up, that God had rejected them, and that they'd felt shame, that their shame was now on display. And I wonder how many of you can relate to those feelings. How many for you are those things part of your identity? Feeling not loved, feeling not wanted, feeling guilty or ashamed of the things that you've done. And I wonder how many of you believe that those things are permanently true about you. The amazing thing that we find in Hosea is that immediately after this happens and these children are born, God says this. He says, "Yet the Israelites will be like the sand on the seashore, which cannot be measured or counted. In the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' they will be called children of the living God. The people of Judah and the people of Israel will come together. They will appoint one leader and will come up out of the land. For great will be the day of Jezreel." And then in chapter 2, "I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called, not my loved one. I will say to those called, 'Not my people,' 'You are my people.' And they will say, 'You are my God.'" So the incredible thing about this is that God is calling out their sin, but actually he immediately then speaks a word of hope, that judgment isn't the end, that their shame isn't the end, that God is able to restore and heal and put back together the ones who had strayed from him and who are now suffering because of it. And that is true for us as well. That includes us. God is the one who can restore and heal and put back together the things that are broken in us. Humans are so complicated. Our identities are made up of so many different things. And the things that change, or the things that are impacted by the changing nature of our world and our lives. And I want to say to you today, if you're struggling to feel okay, then reach out for help. Call your GP. If it's urgent, call a mental health helpline. See a counselor or psychologist, or maybe get a referral from your GP to a psychiatrist. Get the right diagnosis. Get the right medications. Get help accepting those things in your life that can't be changed. All of those things are really important. And if you're dealing with guilt and shame as well, or maybe not feeling hope or purpose or joy, then please reach out to me or to one of the other pastors or elders at this church. We want to help you. We want to talk with you about these things. The truth that I believe God wants us to hear tonight, that he's put on my heart to speak, is that none of those things that I've just described, as important as they are, as significant and impacting as they are to our lives, none of those things need to define us. You don't need to give permanent value to any of those things when it comes to your sense of self, your identity, who you are. If someone has hurt you or rejected you, you're not unlovable. That doesn't make you permanently unloved. If you've done the wrong thing and you feel like you can never forgive yourself, you actually can find forgiveness. You can be forgiven. Whatever success or failure or role or condition you have, you can experience wholeness in your life. And if things change in your life, your job, your personality, your sporting prowess, your looks, your relationships, then none of those things mean that you can't feel whole. You can still hold on to something firm and secure. So step one that I talked about was to not give permanent value to the things that should not be given it. The second step is to give permanent value to the thing that should be given it. And the only thing in this universe that is truly permanent and secure is God himself. I want to read for us from Hebrews chapter 6. It says this from verse 16. "People swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what is said and puts an end to all argument. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised." That's us. he confirmed it with an oath. God did this so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope set before us may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. How incredible are those words? We have this hope as an anchor for our soul, firm and secure. In other words, everything else in life is changeable, but God isn't. We can hold on to Him. He won't lie or change His mind. We can have hope. And what is that hope that God invites us to know in Him? Listen to this. From 1 John chapter 3. See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. Dear friends, now we are children of God. And what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. All who have this hope in them purify themselves just as He is pure. Did you hear that at the end? We're asking tonight and in this series, how can we be made whole? How can we know who we are? Well, here it's saying when we believe in God, when we put our trust and our hope in Him, that we can know that we are His children, that that's who we are. And John says, and all who have this hope purify themselves. In other words, all who have this hope can be made whole. All who have this hope can feel whole because they're connected in their soul to the anchor that is firm and secure. So as we finish, I want you to get another piece of paper, or maybe the back of the piece of paper that you started with tonight. And on this fresh piece of paper, I want you to draw yourself. And above or around or over yourself, I just want you to write, child of God. That's what it means to be whole. And it also means that when we come to ask that question, who am I? We're kind of starting with the wrong question. Our starting question should be, who is God? He is the permanent one. He is the unchanging one. He is the anchor, firm and secure. And having asked that question, we then can look at ourselves and know who we are. Know that we are loved. Know that we have value. And know the God who can heal us, restore us, mend the broken pieces in us, and make us whole. We're going to finish our service tonight in worship. And as we do that, I really want to invite you, especially if you don't know what I've been talking about tonight, if you haven't taken that step of believing in God and putting your trust in Him and knowing Him as your anchor, as your firm foundation, something to hold on to when everything around you and in you is in flux, then I want to invite you as this song is sung to reach out to God, to hold on to Him. And just say, God, I need You. Would You help me feel whole? Would You heal me, restore me? So that no matter what circumstances I experience in my life, I can know fullness and hope and joy in You. And if you have already taken that step in your life and you're living this already, then use this song as a moment of celebration, a moment to pour out your praise and your worship of the God through whom you can know yourself and walk confidently towards Him and through all that life has for you. Let's worship together. God is so good. And life can be so challenging, but it's when we reach out to Him, when we know who He is and can praise Him for that, it's then that we can know who we are and approach life with a firm foundation and know that we always have Him to hold on to. He is our anchor. He is the one who keeps us secure. In Him we find permanence, not only for this life, but into all eternity. Thanks so much for being part of our service tonight. I hope you've been encouraged by it. If you do want to talk about anything that this message has raised for you, then please do reach out to me. My email's there in the notes section of this stream. I'd love to talk to you and help you through this. And also, if you want to chat immediately, we've got our Zoom about to start right now, so you can find the details of that as well. It'll pop up right on your screen. Let me close for us in prayer. God, we praise You that You are the good Father. And God, life can be so confusing and changeable, but would You help us to hold on to You? Would You help us to know who we are because of You and in You? And may You lead us, God, into fullness of life and hope and joy in Your continued presence. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Bless you guys. Have a great week.